Welcome to The Wicket.
Hello and welcome to another helping of Cricket Chat from Arab News here at The Wicket. I'm Brian Murgatroyd, and with me as ever to review the goings-on in the sport locally in the Gulf, regionally in Asia and worldwide, Arab News columnist John Pike and Arab News cricket reporter Subhash Hamagain. Hello, gentlemen.
Hello, Brian. Welcome from Oman, Muscat to be precise, the Oman Cricket Academy.
Hi, Brian.
Yeah, what a joy it is to have John and Subhash in the same place, in the same time zone. That's what we've got in this episode. And coming up, we hear from them both because they're at the Asian Cricket Council Premier Cup in Oman, where 10 teams, including Saudi Arabia, are battling it out for one spot in the next Asia Cup. We get John and Subhash's impressions of what they've seen so far. We reflect upon another week of action in the Indian Premier League with close matches and dramatic performances aplenty. South Africa's women are hosting Sri Lanka for a one-day international series, and we catch up on the goings-on there. We look ahead to the Women's T20 World Cup qualifier in the UAE, with 10 sides gathering, with two spots in the main event in Bangladesh later this year up for grabs. We look back on the USA-Canada Men's T20I series, a dress rehearsal for the two sides ahead of their meeting in the opening match of the T20 World Cup in June. And Subhash and John give us their personal highlights from the past week. So, as ever, plenty to talk about, so let's get started. We begin this week where John and Subhash are in Oman for the Asian Cricket Council Premier Cup. It's a tournament featuring 10 teams playing in T20Is: Bahrain, Cambodia, Hong Kong, Kuwait, Malaysia, Nepal, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, the United Arab Emirates, and the hosts. And the top side will go forward to next year's Asia Cup, which features the region's heavy hitters: Bangladesh, India, Pakistan, and Sri Lanka. As we record this podcast, we're almost through the group stage. There are two groups of five, with the top two teams in each group going forward to contest crossover semi-finals. In other words, the top side in one group plays the runner-up in the other. Group A, that features Hong Kong, Malaysia, Nepal, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar. And Group B has Bahrain, Cambodia, Kuwait, Oman, and the UAE. Subhash, let's start in Group A with the side closest to your heart, Nepal. They won their first three matches, a nervy performance against Malaysia, followed by a highly impressive win against Qatar and another one against Hong Kong. And that Qatar match featured a world record, didn't it?
Yeah, Dipender Singh Aidi once again getting the limelight. It's been the talking point all over the world and set some spotlight in the tournament as well. I think he was fantastic that day. Got Nepal out of trouble as well. And the last over was icing on the cake and something to remember for him for the rest of life as well. And I think Nepal have got tournament back on track after that innings, the win against Hong Kong. I think the boys were on a high after that performance from Dipender, and everything looks all right for Nepal at the moment.
Yes, Dipender Singh Aidi, six sixes in an over. He follows Yuvraj Singh and Kyron Pollard into the men's T20I record books. The unfortunate bowler on this occasion was Kamran Khan. John, also in Group A, Saudi Arabia got a fantastic victory against Hong Kong, and they'll probably feel they should have beaten Malaysia too after they had them 53 for 5. Malaysia reached 146 for 7, but then Saudi were 90 for 3 with 7.5 overs to go. Just talk us through that missed opportunity, really.
Yeah, they should really have beaten Malaysia. They leaked some crucial runs early in the field. As you say, they failed to turn the screw at 53 for 5. I don't think I should take anything away from a fine innings by Wahid from Malaysia. Saudi didn't play the slower bowlers particularly well. They looked rusty, they looked nervous. I think they were bullied by Malaysia's aggression in the field to the point where they weren't very happy with several of the decisions. There were too many attempts by the lower order to clear the ropes, and they were only 12 runs short with 5 balls left, which at this level of cricket is, to say the least, rather naive.
Yes, and they lost to Qatar in their latest match as well. They were beaten by 15 runs chasing 154. They slipped to 16 for three. And when you get into that sort of position, it's very difficult to find a way back, isn't it?
Extremely difficult. There was some pretty fearsome opening bowling by left-arm quicks who did the damage. And despite some sort of attempts to rebuild in the middle of the innings, it was just a bit too much for the tail-enders. But a brave effort at the end, just fell short. 15 runs, I think it shows that Saudi are getting there. They're improving. And the more times they play against sides at this level, then one can see them getting steadily better. So I think we can expect more of them in the future with this rather difficult learning experience.
But John, talk to us about Qatar. They're perhaps one of the stories of the tournament because that victory over Saudi has left them in touching distance of a semi-final place.
Yes, I mean, they were dead and buried. 0 points from two games. They've come back to win two victories. I'm not quite sure how they managed to do it. I have to say, those opening bowlers were pretty impressive, and they've got a couple of useful spinners as well, and to tighten the screws in the middle. So they've certainly managed to regroup in pretty impressive fashion with everybody writing them off.
Yes, those opening bowlers, Amir Farooq and Gayan Munawira. And Munawira against Saudi actually managed to bowl a maiden, which is a remarkable thing at this level in this form of the game. So all power to Qatar there for bouncing back and giving themselves a great opportunity of progression. In Group B, Oman, they flexed their muscles, going unbeaten in their first three matches, including a comprehensive thrashing of one of their main rivals, the UAE, by 9 wickets. Chasing 143 to win in a rain-shortened 15-over-a-side match, and they won that with 14 balls to spare. Subhash, is it already looking like a battle between Oman and Nepal for that one spot to go to the Asia Cup?
The early signs are looking like that, but I'd still say Oman need to get past Kuwait to get into the semi-finals. Nepal have had a good start. They bettered themselves with every game, and I still count UAE as one of the potential challengers because UAE, they had an off game against Oman in the third one, but their batting looks fabulous. Asif Khan has scored only 3 half-centuries in a row, so I think that's something to look forward to. UAE are still strong, and they need to beat Cambodia to get into the semi-finals. That's the equation right now. So I think Oman, UAE, both are in the mix with Nepal, who looks like defending the title this time as well.
John, let's talk about the UAE. They started promisingly with Alishan Sharifu, Asif Khan, that Subhash has just mentioned there, and Mohammad Wasim impressing with the bat. But that lack of a cutting edge with the ball we highlighted before the tournament seems to have been their undoing in the Oman match.
Well, Sharifu, of course, failed against Oman. Last week we mentioned Bilal Khan, who's still running in at 37, claimed 3 for 11. And Oman were pretty contemptuous in reply. I think that United Siddiqui went for, I think, 12 and over. Ayan Khan went for 8 and over. And Khalid Khan, I think, 15, I think 13 deliveries. So a drubbing. But as Subhash has mentioned, really a bad game out of the way. Last match against Cambodia for them. And Kuwait pressing hard, though, as Subhash has mentioned, they do play Oman.
Let's talk too about the lesser known sides in the tournament. John, how about Malaysia? What have you made of them?
Well, before Qatar played them, they hadn't got a single point. It turned out to be an exciting affair. Impressed that Qatar could come out fighting against a pretty feisty Malaysian team, who actually wilted under pressure at the end, conceding 30 from 20 balls, during which their chirpiness in the field dissipated very quickly. So I think probably no tears were shed over that one.
Well, that's Malaysia. But Subhash, what about Hong Kong's form? Losses to Saudi Arabia, Nepal. Has Hong Kong's form surprised you?
Yes, indeed. I think they were to be the favourites to top the group along with Nepal. That Nepal-Hong Kong game, what we expected was supposed to be the decider of the group winner. But as it turns out, Hong Kong are bottom of the table and doesn't look like the Nepal matches favored them. They were outplayed in all three fronts. The coach looks amused why the team's not performing. He admitted after the loss against Malaysia there that they were not performing as they need to be. And if you look at the individuals, I think they have quality in their side. It's just that not getting that into the game. And I think it's all hard for them to get the result, not just the result, but to get the win by a higher margin. So it's a tournament to forget for Hong Kong for what the build-up has been preparing for from a long time.
Well, in case you weren't aware, 8 of the sides in Oman are at this stage because of their positions in the ICC rankings. But Saudi Arabia and Cambodia won through to the ACC Premier Cup after finishing as the top 2 sides in the ACC Men's Challenger Cup in Thailand in February. And that was a tournament we covered in depth here at The Wicket. Well, this ACC Premier Cup runs until Sunday, April the 21st, when the final takes place, and we'll round it all up for you on our next episode. Let's talk Indian Premier League now. And since we last spoke, Royal Challengers Bengaluru have hit rock bottom by conceding a record 287-3 against Sunrisers Hyderabad, whilst Mumbai thought they had lift off with two wins in a row after losing their first three games, only to crash back to earth with a 20-run loss to a slick-looking Chennai Super Kings in Mumbai. That latter match featured an extraordinary cameo from MS Dhoni, who rolled back the years to hit his first three balls for six and made 20 not out from four deliveries, and not even an unbeaten 105 from 63 balls by former Mumbai captain Rohit Sharma could trump that, as Mateesha Pattirana was at his best to take 4 for 28. So Mumbai are still languishing near the foot of the table with two wins from six matches, the same as Delhi Capitals, who've lost Australia all-rounder Mitchell Marsh to a hamstring injury. He's flown home for treatment and his tournament may be over. But below both of those sides, as we record this podcast, is RCB, Royal Challengers Bengaluru, with one win from seven matches. And that despite Virat Kohli being in prime form with 361 runs from those seven games. The rest of the side, Dinesh Kartik aside, has been modest and the bowling simply hasn't been good enough, as was shown again during that thrashing at the hands of Sunrisers Hyderabad, which featured 102 from just 41 balls by Travis Head. That's one end of the table, but at the other end is Rajasthan Royals and Kolkata Knight Riders. The Royals have two of the top batters in the tournament so far in captain Sanju Samson and Rian Parag, while the ageless leg spinner Yuzvendra Chahal is turning it on again as the top wicket taker. Subhash, let's start with RCB, and what a mess. That's five losses in a row now, and that latest hammering saw them leave out Cameron Green, Glenn Maxwell, who asked to be dropped, Alzari Joseph and Mohammad Siraj, all in poor form, but the changes still saw them concede that record score. Credit to them for fighting hard in reply with the bat as Dinesh Kartik starred again, making a brilliant 83 from 35 balls, but truly, where on earth do they go from here?
I think they try to rediscover themselves. The tournament hasn't got much for them right now. They're in the foot of the table, only one win. And the bowling doesn't seem to go anywhere. I think that we predicted the same would happen with their focus in batting. But when the batting fires, the bowling doesn't. And when bowling looks to be like doing something, the batting batters haven't stood up. Dinesh Kartik fought it hard, but I think the game was in the first innings itself. They've got two premier bowlers, the foreign bowlers that they spent on, and both of them doesn't look to be fighting. And all above that, I think Mohammad Siraj, much was expected of him, is the local bowler that plays for the national team, but he hasn't played at all. So I think it's Virat Kohli is unlucky to be in that team. He's done everything he could. He's one of the leading run scorers in IPL history, and yet he's on the bottom of the table. So I think they need to rediscover themselves. Look at the next season. I think mega auction is coming up. So I think they should start focusing for that now, giving newcomers some opportunity.
It's amazing, isn't it? We're not even halfway through this edition, and already they need to be looking forward to the next one. John, Delhi, they've shown signs of sparking into life, beating Lucknow. But even that was by no means straightforward, as they had Lucknow 94 for 7 and let them reach 167. And it took a brilliant 55 in 35 balls from debutant Jake Fraser-McGurk to dig them out of that hole. I just wonder, you know, could Marsh's injury forcing the introduction of Fraser-McGurk actually turn out to be a blessing, as he's a player we've spoken of on this podcast before, isn't he?
Well, one swallow doesn't make a summer. It's true to say that Mitch Marsh hadn't made his mark and he was giving off unhappy vibes. For all we know, it might mean that Pat Cummins is T20 captain in the World Cup. As for Delhi Capitals, 4 points from six matches keeps them in reach if they can turn themselves around.
Subhash, two successive wins for Mumbai seemed to quieten the noise around them. And then they ran into CSK, Chennai Super Kings, and that 20-run loss at the Wankhede. And it all started again. Hardik's captaincy, Hardik's form, criticisms, dissatisfaction. It actually prompted Kieran Pollard, one of the side's coaching staff, to come out in a passionate defence of the captain. But how is this going to end, do you think?
Well, the happy ending is in the waiting if they just get the result. As we've seen, if Mumbai wins, the drama is not there from the fans. So if Mumbai goes on to lose, it's Hardik Pandya getting the end of it. So I think Mumbai has made it clear they're sticking with Hardik Pandya. And there are rumors that Rohit Sharma might be released for the next year, and there are teams already hovering around showing their interest. So I think Mumbai should focus on their game. Back Hardik Pandya like they have been doing, for and the fans should get along. I think the ownership has already made it clear they're not going to change anything, so it's for the best of the team they get behind him, because in the next month's time he's going to be donning the blue of India, and they'll need to back him as well. So I think the future step has already been taken from Mumbai, and the fans should just get along and try to support the team so that they can produce results.
John, Jasprit Bumrah took 5 for 21 against RCB. And there was Rohit's 100 against CSK. So there are glimmers of hope. Do you think Mumbai can turn this around for a spot in the top four?
Well, they're also on 4 points from six matches. I mean, it's becoming increasingly difficult to make sense of what's happening this year. It's all very topsy-turvy. If you look at the CSK match, the two bowlers are very expensive. Pandya himself, 2 for 43 off three overs. And Mario Sheffield, 0 for 33 off two. Whereas CSK's bowlers rescued them in the face of Rohit's 100. As you've already mentioned, they lost four wickets between 130 and 157. And Patarana with his 4 for 28. As we've discussed previously, once you lose momentum, it's actually difficult to reassert it, and wonder whether the Indians have actually got the inner strength to be able to do that.
Well, Subhash, what about the top end of the table? Rajasthan won against Punjab without Jos Buttler and Ravichandran Ashwin. Are Sanju Samson, Riyan Parag and Yuzvendra Chahal all playing themselves onto the plane for that T20 World Cup?
Well, they are back in contention, I'd say. But Chahal, I think he should never have been out of the team for India. He's been producing wickets. It's amazing that India's left out their best spinner out and going to the World Cup. So I think Chahal has made his case. Regarding Riyan Parag, I think he's in the top form, but he's fighting for that spot with Shivam Dubey. Rinku Singh, who has been not out of form as well. So I think to get him straight into the setup before the World Cup would be a step too strong. But with Shivam Dubey and Rinku Singh scoring as well, it's a tough choice for the selectors. And regarding Sanju Samson, KL Rahul, Rishabh Pant are both in the fray as well. So it's going to be a tough call for the selectors, but the IPL is still not even halfway through. So we'll need to see how they go on and put the pressure upon the selectors. But right now, I think they're well in contention.
John, we've spoken about Delhi's happy accident, perhaps, to blood Fraser-McGurk. Could KKR look back at the build-up to the tournament where Jason Roy pulled out and they plumped for Phil Salt as a similar bit of serendipity? He clobbered 89 not out from 47 balls against Lucknow in an 8-wicket win. He's been impressive behind the stumps too, hasn't he?
Well, he's been an upgrade for sure. 191 runs in 5 innings. But don't forget also firing Sunil Narine, Shreyas Iyer, the captain, Andre Russell, and of course Mitchell Stark has finally claimed some wickets, 3 for 29. They have 4 wins from 5. They played one less than the others, and the Royals are next up.
Yes, and John, since we last spoke, Gujarat have shown signs of the form that saw them reach the final last year, winning against Punjab with 72 from 44 deliveries from captain Shubman Gill and a brilliant cameo from Rashid Khan with 24 not out from 11 balls after a miserly spell of 1 for 18 in 4 overs. They won after needing an incredible 35 from the final 2 overs. Do you detect they are moving in the right direction?
Well, Gill seems to be growing into the role. Certainly seems to understand it tactically. He said they target 45 off the last 3 overs in whatever innings, particularly when they're chasing. They're using the batter as an impact player and changing people's mindset on that in those situations. Obviously, Rashid Khan coming back to fitness, he's an international class player. So, yes, I think we can detect an upward trend.
And Subhash, the table certainly has started to take shape now with the group stage not far short of the halfway point. Is the top four of Rajasthan, KKR, CSK and one of Sunrisers Hyderabad, Lucknow Super Giants and Gujarat Titans already looking likely? Or can you see Punjab, Delhi, Mumbai or RCB picking up a head of steam?
Well, I think the top three looks settled with the way they are playing, the results they are getting. Rajasthan, KKR and CSK looks to be in the top three. Sunrisers Hyderabad, they have been batting excellently well. They've broken the records two times already. So I think they'll be in the mix for that fourth spot. But I think it's too late for Punjab, Delhi, Mumbai or RCB to come back with the way they're not just the team, but the dressing room, especially with Mumbai and Bangalore is going on. It's tough for them to come back in this tournament.
And John, that's two enormous scores for Sunrisers. Now 277 against Mumbai and 287 against RCB. With the batting power they have, surely no one would want to face them in a knockout match, would they?
Well, probably not, but somebody might have to. It's all worrying that Travis Head is saying they're actually aiming for 300.
Yes, goodness knows what's going to happen if a side reaches 300. We thought that was, it was the equivalent of the 4-minute mile 60 or 70 years ago, and it was broken, and now look where we are. But, how close are we to 300, I wonder? Well, we might see it during this IPL. Well, you can be sure there'll be plenty of twists and turns in the plot as we move towards the back end of the group stage. And as ever, we'll keep across everything of importance here at The Wicket. After the disappointment of their T20i series loss to Sri Lanka on home soil, South Africa's women hit back in style in the second of three one-day internationals in Kimberley after the first was washed out. They chased down Sri Lanka's 229 with 14 balls and 7 wickets in hand as Laura Volvhart, who we've waxed lyrical about on this podcast previously, continued her fine form as captain with an unbeaten 110, while Marizanne Kapp made 77 not out from 84 deliveries, and the pair added an unbroken 144 in 28 overs. John, Laura Volvhart produced again. It's hardly news that, I guess. She's moved to the top five of the ICC rankings on the back of her 100 in this match. But someone who really does knit this side together has to be Marizanne Kapp. She opens the bowling and then can produce quality like this with the bat. What an all-rounder she is.
Yeah, from the doom of the T20 to the heights of ODI. As you say, it may not be news about Volvhart, but it is a sort of redemption. And in the middle of that innings, of course, she became South Africa's leading women's run scorer in ODIs, 3.764, surpassing Mignon Deprez's 3.760, having played an incredible 60 games fewer. The performance was untypical, pretty gritty performance on a slow surface against some canny spinners. And she admitted that Kapp's crucial input, not just with the bat on the ball, but in helping her keep her frustrations in check and not being able to play her natural game and not giving a wicket away.
Yes, it was a terrific gutsy innings from her, actually, because as you mentioned there, John, it was by no means her at her fluent best, Laura Volvhart, but she stuck around there and got the victory. John, also, is it fair to say, with Marizanne Kapp and Ayabonga Kaka, who took 3 for 28 in the victory, South Africa have one of the best new ball pairings in women's cricket.
Well, it's a fair claim, since Kapp is third in the ICC women's ODI rankings, just behind Kate Cross, and Kaka is eighth. What about competitors to that pairing? Well, I think Jess Kerr and Leah Tahua are in with a shout for New Zealand.
Subhash, the run-up to this one-day international series was dominated by speculation that Chamari Attapattu was all set to retire from international cricket after some cryptic social media posts from her after the T20i series win. She then confirmed she'll be playing in the T20 World Cup qualifier and made 51 in that one-day international. But do you think that sort of speculation had any sort of destabilising effect on the team?
Well, social media post in Chamari is not a new thing. I think she had similar thing when she expressed her dissatisfaction not being picked in the franchise leagues, and she went on to play and not just play. She was the MVP of Women's Big Bash. But this time around, it's for the wrong reasons. And I think as a captain, as a leader, she should be looking at the team and how the players look up to her. So the big tournament, the World Cup qualifier is coming up, and she needs to be more responsible. I think that's least expected from someone like her.
Well, we'll wrap up this series in the next podcast. Another news line for you is that Pakistan and West Indies women are starting T20i and ODI matches from April the 18th. There are three one-day internationals, which are part of the ICC Women's Championship, plus five T20Is, and we'll update you on the ODI series in our next podcast. That Women's Championship is the qualifying method for next year's ICC Women's World Cup in India. It has 10 teams battling for six spots, with the four sides below the line facing the prospect of playing in the qualifier. As we record this episode, the order is Australia, South Africa, England, New Zealand, Pakistan, India, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, West Indies and Ireland. India will qualify automatically as hosts and have also played fewer matches than any other team, while the West Indies do have matches in hand on those sides above them. So these three matches have major significance, especially for Hayley Matthews' team. As we record this podcast, we're just over a week away from the start of the Women's T20 World Cup qualifier in the UAE, which is set to get underway on Thursday, the 25th of April. It's a 10-team event staged in Abu Dhabi across two venues with Ireland, the Netherlands, Scotland, Sri Lanka, Thailand, Uganda, the UAE, the USA, Vanuatu and Zimbabwe taking part. Two sides will go forward to the T20 World Cup in Bangladesh. The teams have been divided into two groups of five, with Group A made up of Scotland, Sri Lanka, Thailand, Uganda, and the USA, while Group B features Ireland, the Netherlands, the UAE, Vanuatu, and Zimbabwe. Sebash, we've spoken already about Sri Lanka and how they'll come into this tournament off the back of a T20I series win in South Africa. They've had a long, hard tour there. Do you think that will be a help or a hindrance?
I think that will be of a help because they've not played for a few months now after the Asian Games. So it was Samari that was playing in the franchise Knicks, but other players did that test for international cricket. You can't just go into the big tournaments and expect results. They will have warm-up matches to get used to the environment, but I think South Africa will be a good test for them to get themselves ready for the World Cup qualifiers.
And John, Scotland are all set to come into this tournament off the back of some excellent form, albeit in one-day internationals. They've played against PNG and the USA in Dubai and won convincingly with two half centuries from Catherine Bryce. They actually have three players. That's Catherine Bryce at the Manchester Originals, her sister Sarah at Welsh Fire, and Ailsa Lister at Birmingham Phoenix in this year's Women's 100. Are they your second favourites to go through to the semi-finals from this group? And if not, why not?
Well, if you assume Sri Lanka ranked seventh or top, Thailand ranked 12th, Scotland 14th, and then we have Uganda 18th and USA at 23. I think although Thailand have been stuttering of late, I think it's probably between them and Scotland. Maybe the latter's aggression might make the difference.
Sebash, Group B looks very open, but surely Ireland, having recently won in Zimbabwe in January and February, securing a 5-0 clean sweep of the T20I series there, they must be supremely confident.
Yeah, it was a good tournament for them. They got their all sorts covered. Amy Hunter scoring the runs consistently. I think that was a big plus point for them, century to add up as well. And if you look at the group, I think UAE are playing in the home ground. Looks to be the challenge.
And John, Sebash mentioned the UAE there. Do you think they can do something special on home soil?
Well, I think they'll be confident after the clean sweep in the qualifier last September. They've lost Mahika Gaur, of course, but they have Isha Oza to lead. She recognises it's a step up. If you mean by something special, can they finish in the top two? It's a possibility. I think it would be tough. They're ranked 16th. They're going to have local support. Ireland obviously strong, and Zimbabwe, you know, a bit up and down. So they've got a genuine chance, and I think it'll be a test of their progress. But surely Ireland are overall too strong, I think, likely to be winners of that group.
And both of you, I won't ask you to pick a winner or the two sides to go through to Bangladesh, but can you please give me your semi-finalists and the reasons behind your picks? John, first of all?
Well, I think Ireland, as I already mentioned, are in a good place. I'm going to go for Zimbabwe. I'm going to go for Sri Lanka and Scotland or Thailand, with Sri Lanka v Ireland, depending on the finishing positions in the respective groups.
And Sebash, what do you reckon?
It's all same like John said, but I think UAE will pick Zimbabwe to get through to the semi-finals. They're playing in the home ground. I think having watched them in the ICC tournaments as well. I think they've got the resources to do that. And I think Ahmed Raza will take the team to the semi-finals at least.
Yes, the former UAE men's captain, Ahmed Raza. He's one of the coaching staff with the UAE women. And you can be sure he'll be revving them up to produce in this tournament. Well, we'll be following the action very closely here at The Wicket. So stay with us for all the chat surrounding it as we get closer to seeing which of the 10 teams on show will be joining holders Australia, hosts Bangladesh, England, India, New Zealand, Pakistan, South Africa and the West Indies in Bangladesh later this year. The USA and Canada have wrapped up a five-match T20i series in Houston, Texas, that's provided both sides with food for thought ahead of their opening match against each other in the ICC T20 World Cup in June. The USA won the series 4-0, with match three being washed out. And for the hosts, Corey Anderson, the former New Zealand all-rounder, who played in the 50-over World Cup final in 2015, he made a maiden half-century for the USA with 55 from 48 balls, while Nitish Kumar, who previously played for Canada, having been born there, made his first appearance for his newly adopted country with 64 in 38 balls. Those two innings in the final match of the series saw the USA recover from 9-3 to chase Canada's 168-5, winning with two balls to spare. John, for the USA, they used this series to integrate players like Anderson and Andreas Gaus, the South African-born wicketkeeper batter, into their squad, and they were able to rest banker players like Stephen Taylor and Monank Patel for the final match. The scoreline suggests a thoroughly successful series. Is that how you see it?
As far as the data concerned, yes, I was a bit surprised at the outcome. A clinical performance from the USA, winning by, six wickets, 31 runs, 14 runs and four wickets. And obviously the debutants have bedded in very well, as you said. So I'd say highly successful.
And you see positivity there, John, at long last for the USA ahead of this T20 World Cup?
I think there have been so many false dawns that it would be unwise to go down that route at this stage.
Yes, I think that's a very, very appropriate response there, John, given, as you say, how many bumps in the road there have been for USA cricket over the last few years, many years, in fact. Sebash, on the other side of the coin, what about Canada? The last two matches of the series were close affairs, but it's never good to lose like this so close to a major tournament, least of all against one of the sides you're going to be playing against. What do you make of Canada's performances?
Well, they have been below par for this tournament. They're missing their premier fast bowler, Kalim Sana, through injury. The League Two series that they won, I think he had a huge impact on that. And the batting's not firing as well. Aaron Johnson at the top of the order is showing some chances, but it's the middle order that needs addressing, that has been so strong in the League Two series as well. They had struggled in Nepal against the Nepali side as well. But when things look like going all right, I think Prabhudu needs to go back and get the answer now.
Yes, Prabhudu Dessanayake, the Canada coach, he's got some questions to answer, as have the players, because we're getting ever closer to that T20 World Cup. And a reminder that these two sides will meet again in the opening match of that 20-team event that spans the USA and the Caribbean on June the 1st. There are four groups of five teams each. Group A includes India, Pakistan, Ireland, Canada and the USA. Group B has England, Australia, Namibia, Scotland and Oman. Group C features New Zealand, the West Indies, Papua New Guinea, Afghanistan and Uganda. And Group D is made up of South Africa, Sri Lanka, Nepal, the Netherlands and Bangladesh. And finally, gentlemen, as we always do, let's hear from you about something that's caught your attention this week in the world of cricket. John, let's start with you, please.
Well, it was going to be Saudi reaching the semi-finals of the Asia Premier Cup, but I can't say that anymore. So it's going to be a sad note, the passing of Derek Underwood. Deadly, he was, deadly by name and deadly on helpful wickets. Well known on the Kent cricket circuit during and after playing, 297 test wickets at 25.84, and occasionally a successful night watchman. I mean, altogether, he took 2,465 wickets at 20.28. which puts him in the top 20 in the history of the game. And I think he'll be sadly missed as one of England's cricket's characters at international county and local level.
Yes, a remarkable career. And in fact, after he packed up playing first-class cricket, he actually went and played league cricket in Yorkshire. He loved the game so much. 297 test wickets, as John mentioned there, and he would have got many, many more, but for the fact that he lost 2 years of his career when he joined World Series cricket in the late 1970s, and the back end of his career at international level as well, because he joined up with the Rebel Tour to South Africa in 1982. A remarkable servant, though, a remarkable bowler. And thankfully, footage exists of some of his most wonderful achievements, most notably winning that Test match against Australia at the Oval on that rain-affected pitch in 1968. If you haven't seen some of that footage, I recommend you going to YouTube and seeing if you can find it, because it is well worth a watch. Sebash, what about you? What's tickled your fancy over the past 7 days?
Has to be Deepinder Singh Iyer. I think his six sixes in an over was a proof of what he's been questioned on in the last year. I think he got six sixes in six balls against Malaysia. That was in a different over, a breaking record of Yuvraj Singh for 9-ball 50. And he broke yet another record from Yuvraj Singh, scoring six sixes. So as my friend Andrew Leonard said, the six sixes comes twice in a year. So I think 2024 World Cup could be the another opportunity for him to get it against a better opposition.
Well, let's see whether Deepinder Singh Airy can do it again. But yeah, that truly remarkable effort from him in the ACC Premier Cup. And Sebastian, John, were on hand to see it firsthand. What a remarkable spectacle that must have been. Well, that's it for another episode of The Wicket. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be back soon with more cricket chat from the Gulf region, Asia and worldwide, particularly with John and Sebash wrapping up everything from that ACC Premier Cup in Oman. Please don't forget to like, subscribe and comment on what you've heard wherever you get your podcast. We'd love to hear your feedback and let us know if there's anything you'd like us to feature in future episodes. For now, though, this is Brian Murgatroyd along with John Pike and Sebash Hamagain saying thank you very much indeed for listening, and we look forward to your company again next time.
Farewell from Oman.
Goodbye.